Hey friends, this is Michael Bohm with Youth Apologetics Training. Today we're going to continue on with this series talking about Hinduism. And today we're going to start off by talking about Shiva. Now, Shiva is one of the three main gods, part of the Trimurti. Remember we talked about that a few episodes ago? There is Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. And Shiva's role is to destroy and recreate the universe. Remember, we also talked about the fact that in Hinduism, they believe that the universe is in this constant state of being created and destroyed. One of the things that Shiva is known for is being the Lord of the Dance. He often will take off a shirt and then do the river dance with a bunch of other people on a stage. Oh, wait, maybe not, but no. He has this dance called the Tandav. I'm probably mispronouncing that, too. It is the cosmic dance of death. And so when a particular universe is, in his opinion, its time is up, he does this cosmic dance of death, and the whole universe is done. It's utterly destroyed. Now, it's interesting, too, when you look at pictures of Shiva, there's all kinds of symbolism in these pictures. Like, for example, oftentimes he'll have this cobra wrapped around his neck three times. The three times supposed to represent past, present, and future. The cobra is facing right because Shiva is a Republican. Oh, wait, no. I'm sorry, guys. Shiva, okay, the snake is pointing right because it's supposed to symbolize, it's supposed to represent Shiva's perpetual laws of reason and justice, and how he preserves the natural order in the universe. That snake also represents that kundalini force, that kundalini serpent that lives at the base of the spine. Remember when we were talking about Shaktiism? Oh yeah, by the way, his wife, her name is Shakti. Go figure. And so, anyway, he also has kind of like this matted hair that's put up in a bun, oftentimes depicting like a spout of water coming out of the top of his head, which totally had me stumped for a while. I mean, what is that? Turns out that that's supposed to be... Shiva is the origin of the Ganges River, okay? The Ganges River flows from the top of his head. Wow. Okay, that would drive me nuts. But anyway, he's also depicted as having a crescent moon often on the side of his head. He's got a third eye that, represents wisdom and knowledge and being able to see into the supernatural realm. Okay, you hear about a lot of New Age circles, witches, and even many who are part of different parts of Hinduism, different sects, are looking towards trying to open their third eye. Well, okay, there you go. He also has, a lot of times, these three lines on his forehead. It is supposed to be the Vibhuti. I'm probably mispronouncing that, too. It's supposed to signify the immortality of the Lord and his manifest glory. He often has a trident, and then sometimes even like a drum-looking little drum instrument. And again, blue skin. Blue skin. I'm sorry, I'm stuck on that. I don't understand it. The blue skin. Again, Shiva is the creator and the destroyer. He also is depicted with eyes that are half closed. And that's supposed to signify how he creates and destroys the universe. When his eyes are closed, that would be the beginning of the universe. When his eyes are halfway open, it's sometime in the middle. And then when he opens his eyes all the way, well, maybe that's time to do the dance. Because that universe is done. Okay? Interestingly enough, you know, Shiva, the destroyer. Most people, when they think of Shiva, they think of the destroyer. I find it interesting that on, what was it, Time Magazine? There was a magazine that depicted Barack Obama as Shiva on the cover. And it said something to the effect of God of all things. You know, that stance of Shiva that you often see in a lot of paintings and pictures, where he's got, you know, six arms out doing various things, and his left leg is kicked over to the right. I'm not sure what they're trying to say there, but anyway, not even sure why I brought that up. Just a weird picture. Anyway, how about we move on to Ganesha? Now, Ganesha is the son of Shiva and Parvati. Okay, you know, I hate that when you have a child and it looks like an elephant, but Ganesha is probably one of the most popular of the Hindu gods. He's the one that, you know, you always see these pictures of this elephant-headed god, okay? Sometimes he's even riding a mouse. Now, all joking aside, there's a story how Ganesha ended up with an elephant head. It turns out that, as the story goes, his mother Parvati was bathing one day, and she decided to create a son from the dirt from her body, okay? And she created this son out of the dirt of her body and made him stand at the entrance to her bathroom to guard the entrance and not let anybody in. Well, Shiva gets home and finds this stranger guarding the bathroom, and the boy guarding the bathroom says he can't go in, so Shiva cuts his head off. And so, turns out that that was his boy. And Parvati, she's very mad. Shiva, feeling a little bit embarrassed that he just chopped off his son's head, he sends out a party to get the head of somebody to put it on his boy. And this party goes out. Their instructions are to find anybody whose head is facing north, who's sleeping and head facing north. They find an elephant with its head facing north sleeping. They cut the elephant's head off. They bring it back. They slap that head back on top of Shiva's body and bring him to life. And the rest is history. Now, there is another story, but I like that one better. So that's what I'm going to tell you. I don't know, guys. I don't mean to make light of this, but it is. I mean, it's fascinating stuff. There's Hinduism, by far, of all the different faiths out there that I've studied, is the most creative. I mean, really, that there are no stories of any other religion, any other faith, that come close to the stories that you're going to find in Hinduism. So anyway, Ganesha, he is the god of success, okay? So he's often depicted as a god with a elephant head, big flappy ears, trunk, pot belly of a human being. So his body is a human's body. He's got a big fat pot belly. He is often seen with, he's got forearms, okay? And you see him with like a goad in one hand, and you know, he's known for goading people towards success, okay? So he kind of gives you some nudges and pushes with his goad. A lot of times he's got a rosary in one of his hands. Yeah, that's right. I said rosary. We're going to talk about that a little bit. The rosary of Catholicism is strangely similar to the, I'm probably going to mispronounce this, but the mala or mala of Hinduism. They both have their prayer beads. You know, in Roman Catholicism, they call it a rosary. Well, in Hinduism, they've got these, I think it's Radrashka prayer beads, these mala prayer beads, often made from the seeds of a Radrashka tree, and 108 beads on them. We'll talk about it a little later in this series, I think. But Ganesha is often depicted with one of these rosaries in his hand. Sometimes he has a broken trunk and one of his, tusks, not a broken trunk, a broken tusk. And that is symbolizing the fact that he sacrificed one of his tusks to write the Mahabharata. He is also seen as a god of education and the destroyer of pride. That is Ganesha. All right, so let's look at Krishna. Now, I'm at the 10-minute mark, and there's a lot to say about Krishna. Krishna was born to parents Devaki and Vasudeva. again, probably mispronouncing the names here, while they were in prison. And this is kind of a long story, but let me see if I can make it as short as possible. We've got an evil king, Kanza. He's depicted as a giant, creepy-looking guy, really tall, really tall. And he ends up imprisoning his father and taking the throne. And so then we have this prophecy that comes down that the eighth child of this couple, this Devaki and Vasudeva, would end up killing King Kanza. All right, so he imprisons the parents and starts slaying their babies. Every time they have a baby, then the king just kills the baby. The king ends up killing six babies. The seventh baby ends up being supernaturally transported to another woman's womb named Rohini, and that baby is born and lives. And then the eighth baby is a miscarriage, and the ninth baby, the promised baby, if you will, is Krishna. Which is really weird, because you have an element of a supernatural birth there, where Vishnu comes down and impregnates this Devaki. And some people will say that this is actually, you know, well, Christianity copied Hinduism. No, hold on real quick. Hinduism, first of all, in this story, she's not a virgin. Okay, so yeah, okay, so a god came down and impregnated her. Well, when you look at the writings that this comes from, according to modern scholarship, now most of Hinduism will claim that these writings go way back, but most modern scholarship claim that these writings actually came about around somewhere around 500 to 1000 AD. All right, so no, this is not, Christianity did not copy the story, but anyway, whatever the case, Krishna is born, he is snuck out of the prison, he is raised by a foster family of cowherders. Krishna becomes known as kind of a prankster. He's always running around playing the flute and pulling pranks on the milkmaidens. Kind of, he's played out to be a really fun guy, all right? And one of the themes of Krishna is that he likes to play games not for sport or gain, but rather just for fun. Okay, so you have this element of him being just a really fun guy when he's younger, goofing around. Some of the stories of things he did with the milkmaidens was maybe a little too frisky, a little too steamy, but kind of an interesting character. In fact, one of the celebrations around Krishna that was inspired by Krishna, this is actually kind of interesting. They have this celebration that is called Janmashtami? I don't know. All right, but this is so unsafe. It looks horrifically unsafe. But they'll do these human pyramids. This is not like your typical American human pyramid where everybody's kind of on their hands and knees and they stack up that way. No, they're standing upright. And I was looking at some of the pictures on Google, and they'll get up to like six levels of people. All right, now you got to imagine just how high up in the air that top person is, and they're just kind of standing on shoulders and hands and stuff like this. Okay, so you have like this pyramid of people standing upright, and they go all the way up to five, six levels up, possibly more. The biggest one I saw was six levels, and you are way up there. And then the guy at the top, or gal for that matter, tries to break a pot, like this clay jar filled with, I think, milk and honey, and then it pours down on top of everybody, and yay, you win. Oh, it's buttermilk. Sorry, it's buttermilk. And yeah, very unsafe. Looks like something I would have loved to do when I was younger and thought I was invincible. But anyway, we get back to Krishna. All right, and as he was younger, he killed a demon named Putna. That's kind of a weird story. She shows up and as Krishna's a baby and puts poison on her breast and tries to breastfeed Krishna, and Krishna sucks the life out of her. That's weird. And he kills a tornado demon named Trinayarta. He also tames a serpent named Kaliya. It's like this multi-headed serpent, and he tames it by dancing on its heads. So you kind of see that, again, that theme of him being kind of a fun guy, okay? But then he gets older and he takes part in many of these huge wars. And see, I've already made it to the 15-minute point, and there's so much to say. At one point, one of these wars, he teams up with another kind of famous guy from many of the tales in Hinduism, Arjuna, who is like this incredible archer. It is said that he never lost a single battle. Okay, so this guy is kind of like that elf guy in Lord of the Rings. He like hits everything with his bow. He's just an incredible shot. And him and Arjuna really make a good team. Eventually, Krishna does kill King Kansa and frees the imprisoned king and puts him back on his rightful throne. Krishna now becoming a prince of the throne. Krishna had 8 wives. Okay, well, okay. Technically, he had 16,108 wives. But the 16,100 wives came from, there was a situation where they were imprisoned by a demon. And Krishna killed the demon, busted them out. And because they'd been imprisoned and controlled by this demon, they were all pretty much... well, for a lack of a better way of saying it, they were all unclean, okay? Nobody wanted to touch them. They were the kind of ladies that nobody would marry now because they had been imprisoned by some creepy demon guy, okay? Well, Krishna busts him out, and as an act of goodwill, he marries all of them. He has no relation with the 16,100 of them and lets them live with him and... well, just kind of restores their place in society. So again, you see this concept of Krishna being a really loving, nice guy, okay? But he's also a conquering hero as well. You see one account where Krishna is talking to Arjuna, and they're about to go into this great big battle. And Arjuna doesn't want to go into this battle because a lot of his relatives, he's going to be fighting, and he doesn't want anything to do with it, all right? And what's fascinating is Krishna gives him this pep talk, and he basically says, look, you know, all these people have built up all this bad karma, all these sins. In fact, I'm going to read this to you. He says, moreover, you, Arjuna, are only a mortal appointee to carry out my divine will. Since the Kauravas, I'm probably mispronouncing that, are destined to die either way due to their heap of sins. Open your eyes, O Bharata, and know that I encompass the Karta, Karma, and Kriya all in myself. There is no scope for contemplation now or remorse later. Check that out. There is no scope for contemplation now or remorse later. It is indeed time for war, and the world will remember your might and immense powers for time to come. So rise, O Arjuna. Tighten up your Gandiva, that was his bow, and let all directions shiver till their farthest horizons by the reverberation of its string. All right, and so you get this concept of, look, it doesn't matter how many of these people you kill, they're all stuck in this wheel of samsara. You're freeing them from this present life filled with bad karma so that they can move on into the next life and hopefully try to climb out of this pit they've dug themselves. Interesting. Krishna eventually gets killed. At the end of his life, he is sitting under a tree meditating, and some hunter walks up and sees his foot, and he mistakes Krishna's foot for a deer's foot and ends up shooting him in the leg, I guess. Krishna dies a slow death because it's a mortal wound. He ends up telling this guy that shot him that it's okay that you shot me and that you killed me, because in a former life, I killed you when I was Rama. And, interesting. All right, so, yeah, Krishna is depicted as another one of the blue gods, okay? So there's that blue skin theme again that just totally stumps me. A lot of his pictures show him as a little baby, some of them as a young man having a good old time, and then you have a lot of pictures of him making war. There's some interesting pictures where he is having or battling Kansa. Kansa's huge, giant, and then there's this little blue man beating him up. So anyway, that is Krishna. I know. How do you do Krishna justice in, wow, I went 10 minutes on Krishna, but there's so much to talk about. Really, I mean, you could do a whole series just on some of the main gods of Hinduism. So I'll stop right there. I went a little bit long. Oh, well. Friends, if you'd like to chat about this, you can catch me on Google+, Facebook, and Twitter. And with that, I love you guys, and I'll see you tomorrow.